couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, Spirited, A Christmas Story Christmas, The Santa Clauses, and Grogu and the Dust Bunnies. I'll also be talking about some news in the trailer park and the home cinema roundup featuring 3,000 Years of Longing. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And until it completely implodes and goes into oblivion, you can find me at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Once again, I want to plug my book, The Organ Grinder. You can get it through the Kindle store. It's a slasher book. And then you can also find all my other stuff. You've got a couple anthologies of short horror stories. You've got an anthology of science fiction, a couple novels, and some novellas. There's one about zombies during Thanksgiving. That's a great little novella that you can read, and it's very timely. There's also one about Christmas and zombies. Go to the Fat Guys at the Movies page and go to the books menu, and that will take you to the Amazon store. Next, I want to talk about the box office. As expected, Black Panther Wakanda Forever dominated the box office. It topped everything with $181 million, which is slightly lower than the original Black Panther, which was like just over $200 million for the 3-day, and then it was like $240 million because it was a President's Day weekend. So you did have that long weekend going for it. Even if it's a little bit behind the first Black Panther, I don't think anyone needs to start having a bake sale to help out Disney. That's the highest opening ever in November. Now, that's an impressive feat. It's beaten all the Harry Potter movies. It's beaten all of the Twilight movies that have come out in November. One of the things that's really interesting is no one's talked about this movie much, but Lyle Crocodile is trucking along. It's not making a ton of money, but it only had a 5% drop from week to week, which is really impressive. You almost never get that small of a drop, especially for a movie that's been out for a month. But it made only $3.2 million in the box office this last weekend, but a 5% drop. It's still in fourth place, which is very impressive. I mean, that's along the lines of the kind of drop that Ticket to Paradise has been having. Although Ticket to Paradise finally went on premium video on demand, so that's dropped a little bit more. Same thing with Smile. Smile has finally ended up, I think, on Paramount Plus. Now that it's available at home, it's dropped a little bit more. And then One Piece Film Red from Crunchyroll, that came in like number two last week. It collapsed. It completely hemorrhaged to number eight with 1.4 million. That's an 84% drop. I mean, that is as impressively bad as the hold that Lyle Crocodile had at only a 5% drop. The next piece I want to talk about, this really isn't a movie story. It is kind of partially because it deals with movie stars. But this just caught my eye, and I have to just rant about this for a little bit. Lily Rose Depp, do you know who she is? She's the daughter of Johnny Depp, and I don't know what the heck her name is, some model. One of the people he's been married to and created children with. Anyways, she's a model on her own, and she's in her early 20s, and she's done some films, and she's not a very good actor. I mean, she really isn't. And somebody has used the term Nepo baby to describe her, because she's a model. Now, I mean, she won the lottery of looks because her parents are both good-looking people. I mean, Johnny Depp looks like he's been drugged behind a truck for a while, but when he was younger, he's a really good-looking guy. And her mother, of course, is gorgeous. She's a model, and she's got that skinny look and everything. But she became like a Chanel model, and like they call it an ambassador. I don't know what the heck that means. I don't think she's actually negotiating nuclear disarmaments or anything. She's just putting on clothes and perfume. But she sort of lashed out about the Nepo baby. Oh, well, I've had to work just because your parents are doctors and you become a doctor. You still had to go to medical school. I'm like, you did not go to medical school to become a model. But here's the thing. She didn't think she's a Nepo baby, which is exactly what somebody who's a Nepo baby would think. It's like these people, like, you know, like Elon Musk is in the news a lot because he's destroying Twitter right now. You know, he's one of those people that's like, oh, I started with nothing and an emerald mine from my parents. I mean, Look, if you're going to be privileged, at least acknowledge your privilege and thank the world for it. Say, you know what, I had a lot of opportunities because my mom's a fashion model and she had connection and my dad's a famous movie star. Look, I get wanting to be a good dad and wanting to help take care of your kids, but at least teach your kids to realize, be like, I got my start because my parents were involved in this. It's like Bryce Dallas Howard. I don't think there's anywhere in the world that she's going to sit there and say, I had no advantage to being Ron Howard's daughter. I mean, she understands that. So, but you know, hey, look, I don't hold any ill will against Lily Rose Depp because, look, at least I get to eat carbs and I don't have Johnny Depp as my dad. So I think I came out on top on this one. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I got two Salma Hayek movies here to talk about for some strange reason. The first one is Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, which comes to theaters on December 21st.
Well, I'm supposed to be a fearless hero.
What are we looking at?
Cats have 9 lives. Now I am on my last life.
Oh no.
Only shooting star.
Legend tells of a wishing star, of a single wish waiting to be granted. Kitties of Paws, I need your help.
Is the great Puss in Boots asking for help?
Well, you see, Kitty, please. That wish will get me my life's back.
This was originally supposed to come to theaters in September, and it got shuffled around with all the pandemic nonsense. And it's interesting because it looks like they've adjusted their design of the animation, which looks a little more interesting, almost like that stylized design you had on something like Paws of Fury, that movie, The Blazing Saddles with Samurai. And the other thing that's interesting about this movie is it's still trying to attach to the Shrek franchise by throwing a Smash Mouth song in there. I'm done with Shrek, but I'd like to see more with Puss in Boots. The next one I want to talk about is Magic Mike's Last Dance in theaters on February 10th.
Why are you in London?
I'm going to put on a show at this famous theater.
People are numb, disconnected. We're going to wake them up with a wave of passion they've never felt before.
Hell yeah.
Without further ado, I give you the visionary artist, Magic Mike.
So,
the real question is, why have you, not her?
No one's believed in me like your mom has.
Okay, this is another Magic Mike movie. And, you know, the problem that bothers me about this isn't the fact that it's sort of glorifying male strippers. I don't care about the female gaze. I think what I finally realized bothered me about the Magic Mike movies is twofold. On one hand, it's sort of the Flashdance model. If you go back and watch the original Flashdance, basically they're strippers, but they're dancers, and they're all about the dance, but the guys just want to see girls dance. And the routines that they put on in Flashdance are absurdly complex for some dive in wherever city this takes place. And it's the same thing that you saw in the movie Burlesque, which was a fun movie, but these were elaborate acts, and most guys nowadays, if they're going to go see a burlesque show, they're going to want to see some boobs. And they're like, oh, it's all about dance and it's about the performance. And that's kind of what they do here. But here's the thing. When they actually make a movie about strippers, I'm talking female strippers for guys, it turns into something like, what was that, Hustlers, the one with Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu, where they're just like, oh, look at these pathetic losers who are just dropping money on us. Oh, we're just going to take them for all they've got. Or it's something like Showgirls, which is just sleazy as all get out. But then you make Magic Mike and it's like, oh, you guys have all these stripper movies for guys. Like, yeah, but it makes us look gross. It's kind of like reminds me of when Twilight was a big thing. And I remember complaining about these women in their 30s and 40s lusting over this 16-year-old kid. And they're like, well, that's what you did with Britney Spears when she... I'm like, no. A lot of guys saw Britney Spears in that Hit Me Baby One More Time video, and we felt ashamed about that. There's no shame with you lusting after Taylor Lautner when he was 16. I don't know. These movies, I find them boring and stupid and insipid, and I've not liked either one, so I'm probably not going to like this one either. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to talk about Spirited and Grogu and the Dust Bunnies.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
Support for Fat Guys at the Movies is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. With Manscaped's performance package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Look, whether you're a fit snack or a big fat slob like me, you've got some hedge trimming to do. And, you know, let's face it, life is full of wrinkles, and so are your privates. So personal grooming can be terrifying. But what's great about Manscaped's tools is they're waterproof and they're lightweight. It also has an LED light so you can see where you're trimming your nooks and crannies. Best of all, the Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents using advanced skin-safe technology with a ceramic blade. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some Christmas movies. I know it's not Thanksgiving yet. I know next week's Thanksgiving. But they're already releasing Christmas movies. And I got to cover some of them here. And the one I want to talk about today, right now, is Spirited, which is available. Well, it's in theaters now. It's actually, I think, came in the theaters in limited release last week. But you can still find it in theaters this week. Or if you have Apple TV Plus, you can watch it at home. In Spirited, this modern musical retelling of A Christmas Carol sees Will Ferrell as the ghost of Christmas present trying to redeem the unredeemable Ryan Reynolds.
What is all of this?
I am your ghost of Christmas present.
Like A Christmas Carol?
What do you think I'm going to be all intrigued by what's behind the door?
Not even a little bit curious?
My first save? There was this little sick kid.
What did they call him?
It was Tiny Tim.
No. Sweet kid, one crutch.
Nope.
Little Larry.
No, Tiny Tim.
Micro Mike. Super small Steve.
Holy.
It is a real risk to do yet another version of A Christmas Carol. It has been done so many times, it's absurd. And they even point that out in the movie. Because at one point, Ryan Reynolds says, wait, is this like A Christmas Carol? You mean that movie with Bill Murray? He's talking about Scrooged. There have been so many versions of it. There have been live-action versions. There's been that CGI one, the mocap version that Robert Zemeckis did about 10 years ago that was 3D and it was very authentically done, but it looked creepy because everybody was in an uncanny valley. And they've done Mickey's Christmas Carol, and they've done Scrooged, and they've done a version of A Christmas Carol in almost every sitcom that's ever been produced. That's a risk because this story has been done to death. So the idea of changing it a little bit and sort of turning it on its ear works. The premise is there's this industry of the ghosts of Christmas, and they pick somebody every year and then they try to reform them just as they did with Ebenezer Scrooge. And it's all become modernized and, you know, they've got like HR and, you know, they got an office behind the scenes, that kind of thing. And we've seen that stuff done before with everything from Fred Claus to the Santa Claus. And even there was an Art Carney movie. It was a TV movie back in the 80s where he played Santa. You know, they always like to show the modern version of how Santa's workshop has computers and flight navigators and all that kind of stuff. So they do that in Spirited, but that's not new. That's something that you've seen dozens and dozens of times before. So that itself doesn't make it new. But they also make it a musical. And one of the things I thought worked about it with a musical is it doesn't overdo the songs. Now, in the beginning of it, there's a bunch of songs kind of crammed in the first 20 or 30 minutes. And one of the things I don't like about musicals is sometimes there's just too many songs. In musicals, like a Broadway show, you're looking at the spectacle. But in a movie, you got to trim it down. And the music and the songs needs to propel the plot. And if all it's doing is giving you a production number, I don't think that furthers the movie. Like something like the Young Frankenstein musical. There's a line in the Young Frankenstein movie where Frau Blücher says, yes, he's my boyfriend. And it's a great little throwaway funny line. they made an entire freaking song out of it for the musical. And like in the Christmas Story musical, there's a throwaway line in the original Christmas Story where it talks about how the dad, you know, basically sends away for as many, he wants to win every little contest. He tries everything because he wants to get something from nothing. It's just a little personality quirk that they have for him. And it's kind of cute to see, but they made an entire song and dance number out of it in the musical. And I'm like, this goes nowhere. This doesn't add to the movie. This doesn't add to the story. But they get those songs out of the way and then they pepper them in periodically, but they don't overblow it. It doesn't feel like an episode of Glee where they need to clock so many different musical numbers. So that's one of the things they did well, is they had some music in there, but they didn't overdo it. But they continue throwing them in occasionally. And then they change up the story enough, because the whole point is Ryan Reynolds' character is unredeemable. He's been branded unredeemable. And they said, well, we can't fail. We need to turn somebody. And Will Ferrell's character wants to help this unredeemable guy. And there's a backstory to that. And so they switch some things up and they actually make it about these characters. They make the characters real enough within this framework that you actually find it interesting. And then it's funny because you've got Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell, who are both very, very funny people, and they work well together. And it's not overly sanitized because they drop a couple bad words in there and they have a couple jokes here and there, but nothing that's, I mean, it's PG. And it turns out to be really cute. And it's really sweet too, because as much of a jerk as Ryan Reynolds' character is, there is a nugget of goodness in him. There is something there to make you want him to succeed, make you, you want him to reform. You want him to be redeemed. And that's the key to making a movie like this. So I was talking with a critic last week. What he said is exactly the same thing I think. He's like, it's a risk, but you know, it got me. It hooked me. And I'm like, I felt the same way. And it does it quickly. It's not something that takes too long to get to the point that you kind of fall in love with the movie. You get hooked early. Even if you don't like musicals, it works. It's a sweet little Christmas story. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's a heck of a risk, but it works like a charm with not too many songs and plenty of comedy from Ferrell and Reynolds. They both do a good job. And I laughed. There's some very specific funny lines, but it also has heart and charm, and it gets you to the end, and it makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. And I guess that's what we got to have this time of year. So I'm going to say Spirited totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is not even a movie. It's a short. I don't even have a trailer for it because there's no dialogue, and the thing's like 3 minutes. But I thought I'd talk about it. Grogu and the Dust Bunnies. This short cartoon from Lucasfilm and Studio Ghibli shows an encounter between Baby Yoda and the soot sprites from My Neighbor Totoro. I heard about this because my son actually was following this because he's a big anime fan and he loves Studio Ghibli. And he was telling me, oh yeah, there's this weird little crossover with Baby Yoda and My Neighbor Totoro. And I'm like, really? I'd not heard of it. And I didn't get a screener for it. And I understand why, because it's 3 minutes. Yeah, it's not hard to watch. And it's right there on Disney Plus. It's this short little film where you've got Baby Yoda, Grogu, and he encounters the dust sprites. So they're the little black balls of soot. They're basically dust bunnies, and they call them dust bunnies in English. And there's a term for them in Japanese that means something like soot spirits or something like that. Soot, like, you know, soot from the chimney. Dirt, you know. And it's just this cute little romp through this shared universe. And I, first of all, I love Star Wars and I love Studio Ghibli, and I love the fact that they brought them together in such a charming little way. And there's no real story there. It's just the interaction between the characters of the Dust Bunnies and Grogu. But it's one of those little things that it's just fun to watch. It's a nice little throwaway 3 minute short, and it's cute and adorable. It's an adorable, quick one-off cartoon that really makes you wish for more. I mean, I don't want to just see 2 hours of them. I want there to be a story, but I'd love to see Grogu show up in a Ghibli movie or do something connected, or have Studio Ghibli do a Star Wars short or something like that. That's longer than just 3 minutes and actually has a plot. But still, I'm going to have to say Grogu and the Dust Bunnies, which is available on Disney Plus, rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, and the Santa Clauses. You want to hear one of the scariest noises a man can hear? Makes you cringe, doesn't it, if you know where that's going to be going. But if you use Manscaped, the Lawnmower 4.0, you have less to worry about. The Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents. It uses a ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, and it's much safer to use on your wrinkly bits. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a new film that's coming to Netflix, and it's also going to be in theaters. It's not in theaters yet, and I want to talk about it this week part for a couple reasons. One of them is it comes out on Wednesday of this coming week, the day before Thanksgiving, which is you always get movies opening the day before Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving week. So I thought I'd get a jump into it, put it on your radar, because it's got a 1 week or probably week and a half limited run in theaters, and then it'll be coming to Netflix at Christmas. Also, because I was fortunate enough to go out to Los Angeles and attend the premiere of Glass Onion's A Knives Out Mystery. In this movie, Master Detective Benoit Blanc travels to an isolated Greek island with the billionaire and his set of unlikely friends to solve a mystery.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is it.
You expected the mystery.
Get your hand off of that.
You expected a puzzle. But for one person on this island, this is not a game.
Will you explain it to us then, Detective?
It's a Knives Out mystery, which it doesn't mean anything more than there was a movie called Knives Out about 3 years ago that had the character of Benoit Blanc, who is played by Daniel Craig. And when I saw Knives Out, I didn't understand really where Rian Johnson was coming from to make this movie. He is basically trying to do Agatha Christie-type movies. And Knives Out takes place in a house where there's been a murder. And in Knives Out, it's all these relatives in this house. And they're all horrible people. Everybody has a problem. And Benoit Blanc somehow shows up there and has to solve this mystery. But what's neat about it is that he treats Benoit Blanc the way that Agatha Christie would treat Hercule Poirot or Miss Marple. He's a character that shows up, and Rian Johnson in the press conference, he said the way he approached it is a detective is the main character, but the story's not about him. And that's a good way of looking at it. And I've watched, like, you know, a bunch of mysteries on TV and, you know, everything from Murder, She Wrote to Psych and Monk. And those are always fun. I liked Knives Out, but I felt it was almost trying to force the premise a little too much. Because this is a sequel, and this also leans more into the comedic elements, I'm reticent to call it a comedy, because it's not really a comedy. It's a serious movie about murder, but it has some very funny moments to it, and you realize that you're working within the formula. And look, I blow hot and cold with Rian Johnson. I think, by far, The Last Jedi is the worst Star Wars movie ever made. I know all about the prequels. I know all about Star Wars Holiday Special. I still have serious problems with The Last Jedi. And I've seen a bunch of Rian Johnson's films. I've not seen all of them, but I've seen a good number of them, and I'm never really turned on by them. That's just a taste thing. But I really liked this movie. I liked Knives Out, but I really liked this movie because he hit the best balance between comedy and a serious murder mystery. And that's what makes it work. And he's got this great ensemble. I mean, you've got this cast of people like, you know, not just Daniel Craig in the lead role, but you've got Kate Hudson and Edward Norton and Jessica Henwick and Catherine Hahn and Leslie Odom Jr. It's a very well done ensemble. And I don't want to say too much about it because the whole point of the movie is you want to watch the twists and turns. There's a setup and then there's a payoff, but there are multiple times where things shift. And this was done expertly well in the movie. They can make those shifts without betraying the story. One of the things I can't stand in a mystery is when suddenly you're coming for like the reveal or one of the reveals, and they come in and they go, oh, by the way, here's all this stuff you didn't know that solves all the mystery. And I mean, they introduce some pretty crazy stuff out of left field here and there, but that's not the reveal of what really happened. There's a bit in the TV show Monk where they say, here's what happened. That's sort of like their summing up moment. It doesn't hinge on that. It just propels the story in a different direction. So when they have these twists, it'll propel the story. You'll get new information. But a mystery, you should be able to look at it and figure it out yourself. And you should be able to do that with this movie. But there's a very obvious misdirection, and he does the misdirection well. Glass Onion really works as a great little mystery. And they're apparently going to be making, I was talking to people at Netflix, they're making a whole bunch of these movies. And the other thing is, it's clear that Daniel Craig's having fun making this movie. You know, he hated doing James Bond. You know, he got the role, but he's played James Bond for 15 years. But he hated James Bond. He hated playing it because he just didn't think it was interesting. This, you can tell he really likes what's going on in the stories. So, yeah, Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. You know, it's clever and it's funny. This traditional murder mystery is quite an enjoyable ride. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Santa Clauses next. After decades of being Santa Claus, Scott Calvin decides to retire to spend more time with his family.
It was different out there. All those kids turned into adults. They stopped believing and I'm losing magic. So for the good of Christmas, I'm retiring. For the first time, I'm going to spend Christmas with my family.
New Santa is destroying Christmas spirit.
I retired too soon. I hired the wrong guy. I've got to go back to the North Pole. Elves are disappearing.
Elves are disappearing? You should have led with that.
This is a series on Disney Plus based on the Santa Claus series. You know, Tim Allen played the guy who turns into Santa Claus in the Santa Claus, and then they had the second movie, which was the Mrs. Claus, and then he had the Escape Clause where Jack Frost, played by Martin Short, tried to take over. And this is him after, you know, a couple decades of playing Santa Claus. And it is a weird setup because on one hand they're all kind of lamenting the fact that Santa works at Christmas, but he's Santa. It's like I have a couple sons that work at Best Buy. And I just know they don't have time to do a whole lot of stuff on Thanksgiving weekend because that's a huge week. I just know that. It's like my wife's a teacher. I know there are certain times where we can't take vacations because they have to have school. You're relegated to your vacation on spring break, Christmas break, or summer. These are just products of the industry. So I think it's a little bit of a stretch to complain that they don't have Christmas with their dad because he's freaking Santa Claus, for crying out loud. Now, the show's okay. It feels in line kind of with the second movie, which I thought was the least of the Santa Claus movies. But all these are all very corny. And this feels much more Disney Channel than Disney Plus in some ways, where Disney Channel just seems to go, I don't know, cheaper jokes. And there's a lot of people out there who are complaining because, you know, there's these weird little political things that are stuck in there, which I really don't care about. You know, look, they're throwaway lines, what have you. But the thing with this one is it's the first Santa Claus I thought was a great movie. The other two, not so much. The second one's the worst. But this one is along those lines. It's meant to be corny and silly, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it has some really dumb moments. I mean, like dumb character moments where, like, the elves don't see something coming when you know something's coming. You know, it just, I don't know, it's a stretch. I mean, I know it's about a guy who turns into Santa Claus, but it's still a stretch. So, I don't know. I mean, I have a Christmas spirit, but this is not unlike the sometimes cringeworthy sequels. This series often just tries too hard, but it still manages a modicum of holiday cheer. So, I was not terribly impressed. I'm going to have to say the Santa Clauses kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we have A Christmas Story Christmas, and then the Home Cinema Roundup featuring 3,000 Years of Longing. The Manscapes Performance Package also includes the Weed Whacker, which will trim unsightly nose hairs and ear hairs, easily cleanable, lightweight, waterproof, and it helps you out when you got hair growing out of weird places. And we all know the older you get, the weirder their hair gets. Look, the holidays are coming up, so you can order one for every guy in your life, because everyone can use a little trim. And you don't want to share these, you know, they're personal items. So with the promo code FATGUYS at manscaped.com, you'll get 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another Christmas story, and it is part of A Christmas Story. It is A Christmas Story Christmas. Ralphie brings his wife and kids home after the death of his father to try to give everybody a traditional family Christmas.
Ralphie, promise me we're going to make this a wonderful Christmas. That would make your father so happy.
I promise.
What had I done? And now it was all up to me?
I suggest you start drinking and don't stop till New Year's.
It's the happy season.
No, Ian. When it's just us decorating, it kind of feels like child labor.
Honey, it's not labor if we don't pay you.
Yeah.
Cheers.
There'll be much mistletoe.
My dad made this all look so easy.
When I first heard that they were making this, which was a couple weeks ago, this was on my radar. I did kind of, you know, think, I go, didn't they already do a sequel? They did a direct-to-video sequel. But the difference with this is you've got most of the cast back. Now, obviously, Darren McGavin's not back. He passed away several years ago. And Melinda Dillon, who played the mother, she's retired from acting. So she's not in the movie either. So they got Julie Haggerty to play her. But all the kids have grown up, and they did not just get Peter Billingsley, who played Ralphie in the original. They got him, but they also got the kid who played Schwartz and the kid who played Flick. But they also got his brother, the kid who played his brother, who's now grown up. He kind of looks like a chubby version of Fredo from The Godfather. But I thought that was really kind of impressive that they got all these people to go back and do this sequel to this movie. So I was like, well, maybe there's going to be something good here. Because for a movie like this that's built on nostalgia and holiday cheer, it's necessary to have at least a good feeling behind it. And the first hour or so, it's rough. They really struggle to find their footing because the story is Ralphie is trying to become a writer, and he's writing these esoteric, long-winded science fiction things, and he's not getting published, and he's getting ready for Christmas, but his father has passed away. And they all go back to the house on Cleveland Street in Indiana to be with the mother. And there's a whole bunch of these weird things that they're really trying to do callbacks to the original movie. Like, Ralphie's a daydreamer in the original movie. So he has these elaborate fantasies about burglars coming to the house and he's got to shoot them with his Red Ryder BB gun, and the thing where the teacher thinks he's got the greatest essay ever and gives him A++++. And that works for a child. But the sort of daydream fantasies that a guy in his 40s would have would probably be a little different. And I'm not talking about you know, they're not going to have showgirls in them necessarily, but they seem overly simplistic. So, like, that first hour is a bit rough. I like the nostalgia. They rebuilt the house because they didn't shoot in the same house. By the way, that house in The Christmas Story, it's in Cleveland, you know, like 2 hours from my home. That's up for sale. You can go buy it. But they don't shoot it there. They like shot this in like Hungary or Bulgaria and rebuilt the town. So it looks exactly like the original, the set. But, you know, it does look like it. And they redo the department store at Higbee's. And, you know, there's a lot of charm to it that they work really well to make it look like it's continuous with the original movie. But it's still just a lot of the stuff just, it doesn't quite land. But then at about the hour 10 mark, it finally figures out what it's doing. It says, okay, we need to change this up a little bit, but we still need to give the absurdity that Ralphie brings to a situation. And from that point on, it's a perfectly charming and wonderful little movie. You just got to get to it. And it's not awful to sit through that first hour or so. It's just not great. But then when it kind of hits that stride, it figures out what it's trying to do, and it figures out what the story is, and it figures out how the kids work in, and how they transfer the childlike wonder to the kids, but keep it in Ralphie, and all this kind of stuff that they have to do. They manage to make it work, and then, like I said, from that point to the end, it's a wonderful, sweet little movie. It gets a little corny, but, you know, it's a Christmas movie. You can be corny. You know, it has a level of cynicism there, and I like that. But I like the fact that you've got all these people that I'm like, God, look how fat he's gotten. or well, he lost his hair. Those kind of elements to it. It's like you feel like you're going to a class reunion with people you actually liked instead of the people who you probably graduated with. It worked for me eventually, but it takes its time to get there. I mean, it takes entirely too long to find its footing. But this is made with love. And eventually, it strikes the right chord for the holiday. I'm going to have to say Christmas Story Christmas kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on 3,000 Years of Longing. Tilda Swinton plays an isolated academic who finds a gin in a bottle and listens to his life story before deciding on her wishes.
So, what would you wish for?
What is your heart's desire?
I do have a question. What does one do with three wishes?
You'll see.
There's no story about wishing that is not a cautionary tale.
We all have desires, even if they remain hidden from us. But it is your story, and I cannot wait to see where it goes.
I remember when this came out sometime this summer. There was a sudden buzz about it because people were like, whoa, a George Miller genie movie. This got a lot of hype, and then it came out, and everyone's like, oh, it's not that good. It's got decent audience scores, and it's got a decent Rotten Tomatoes score. But I think here's where I think advertising gets in the way of the success of a movie. If you watch the trailer, not what I played, but if you watch the actual full trailer, they have this incredible soundtrack that makes the movie sound like it's very trippy and it feels like you're going to see almost a fever dream. That's not what it is. It's way more subdued. The entirety of the movie, or most of the movie, a good chunk of the movie, is her finding this gin in this bottle, and then he's just basically explaining to her how he got there. And it's her being very cautious not to wish for anything, being leery of the fact that he could be a trickster. And I found that really an interesting dynamic, but it's not this over-the-top, crazy, trippy movie that the trailers promised. And that's where marketing can sometimes get in your way. Because if you have a movie that's one thing and you advertise it as something very different, the people who want what they got advertised go see the movie and they'll get disappointed. And then the people who wanted what the movie actually is would see the trailer and be like, no, that's not what I want. But the movie's actually what they would want. So there's this disconnect that I think the movie had with a potential audience. Plus, it's a little bit esoteric. I mean, it deals with philosophy and history and concepts. And I mean, Tilda Swinton's character, she's an academic. Her specialty is telling stories about telling stories. I mean, it's this snake eating its tail type of concepts. But I think there's some great performances. I think Tilda Swinton is, she always gives an interesting performance. Even in terrible movies, she's at least fascinating to watch in almost everything she's in. And Idris Elba is really good too. I mean, this is a neat movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would because I didn't feel like it was as in your face as something like Mad Max Fury Road, which I think just overdoes it. And I think people just, that movie I think got more praise when it wasn't as smart as you thought it was. It was just loud. And it's a fun movie to watch, but I didn't think it was this brilliant piece of art that some people did. I do think this thing has a lot of artistic merit. So it's out there, but not as much as you think. And it's well grounded with strong performances by Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton. So that helps a lot. And I liked it. I actually liked it more than I think I would have if it were overly trippy. Because it's contemplative. And that's okay. Weirdly enough, the DVD Blu-ray, well, I got the Blu-ray, and it doesn't have any special features on it, which is disappointing. And hopefully that's not a harbinger to what's coming up next. Because I always like DVDs and Blu-rays because of the special features, the extra stuff you get. And that became a selling point, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Well, now with streaming, the disc is just there as backup, and you just sign the code, and you can get it through, like, the Movies Anywhere or Voodoo or iTunes or something like that. And, I mean, that's nice to have for convenience sake, but I like the extra special features on there, and they don't have any, which is kind of disappointing. But still, I enjoyed it. I'm going to say that this movie rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. I gotta go. Next week I'm gonna be talking about Strange World and Bones and All. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.